since he's found himself out of the Australian team, it was probably an absolute weight off his shoulder.
We're probably struggling. It's been below par situation we're in at the moment.
You know, I'm not 21 anymore. I'm 31 trying to play a different sport. So that's a whole new challenge within itself.
Whitey, your advice was no good either. You tried to give me all this advice about South Africa and look how I went.
Your ticket into the heart of sport. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Summer Sanctum.
And it's great to have Whitey with us in the Summer Sanctum today after the victory on Sunday against the Melbourne Stars, and he was up and about after the game, no doubt about that. Cameron, good morning to you.
Morning, Half. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, more importantly?
Yeah, good. I sounded a bit ropey, but I promise you I haven't had 3 days on the booze, so... but I'm all right, thanks, yeah.
You were up and about, though, when that final ball was bowled. What, it must have meant a fair bit to you, that victory.
Yeah, as you do, you can get a bit carried away, can't you? But no, it's just obviously a bit of passion coming out, a bit of relief or just a bit of energy, I guess. So it's just nice to it was a good nice feeling, obviously, to win that final in those circumstances. So yeah, just a bit of passion shining through.
So does that add to it the situation of the game where you're basically out of it, and then all of a sudden there's a sniff. And you capitalise on the sniff and you whitewash the rest of the contest. Does that add to the exhilaration? Because you've come from nowhere?
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, it was kind of a bit weird playing the game, thinking back about it now, because you're, at one stage there, at none for 93 or whatever it was, you're probably only a few runs away and an over away from just you've got no chance. Yeah. And then it seemed as though within like a space of just a couple of minutes, which was probably really a couple of overs, that I was thinking, geez, Harry Gurney's got two overs to bowl here and he's going to be pretty tough to hit. I think we should probably win. So that seemed to happen. That change seemed to happen really quickly. I'm sure maybe even watching in the stands and from the commentary boxes, it was probably seemed that way as well. But thinking back on it now, it felt really quick, the change.
So what happens when that first wicket's taken, you get the first wicket. Is there a little team huddle saying, righto, boys, we're in this? Or is it just go about your business still till we get really excited with a couple more?
Yeah, probably just more go about your business. Like, yeah, you're still 1 for 93, needing just under 7 and over. So, but then, the wickets came quickly after that. So things, as I said, things changed very quickly. So, and it was that kind of pitch. The pitch we knew we'd played on all season. We knew it wasn't, an absolute pure batting surface. We'd only played on it 2 days beforehand. The ball was getting soft. And it was a day game. So there's a few factors in our favour as well. So we knew all along that we were half a sniff, but it needed to be, it needed some good play from us and a bit of stuff from the other team as well.
You were in a similar tough position against the Sixers in the semi, really, reverse, because you were batting in the second innings. But what is it about this group that obviously has a mindset that no matter what position you're in, you still, as you say, think you've got a sniff?
Yeah, I guess it's just a bit of self-belief from the players within the individuals, really, within the team. Obviously, a lot of experience there, a couple of younger guys, but especially at the back end of our order, the way that Andrew McDonald and Aaron Finch structured up our batting lineup in that game in particular, and throughout the season, was to have some experience and some finishes, which, Mohammad Nabi did at stages, Tom Cooper in that, those two games, along with, obviously, the player of the finals, Dan Christian. So, yeah, in that situation, in the semi-final, that game was never out of hand. I don't think the run rate ever got to above 10 and over. So, and that was a very good, that was probably the best wicket we played on all year. So, I think there was obviously a lot of belief there, but it was also, you could see the scoreboard and you knew that the game wasn't out of hand, even though it sort of felt like, I think it was, in the 40s with three overs to go, we had two sort of, in batsmen that could do the job. So, and Dan being there and, as we know, has done it all around the world in the last few years, so he's been in that situation quite a lot as well. So experience definitely counts.
Well, talk to us about Dan Christian, because as you say, he was a big player in both of your finals games. What's he like? Give us a bit of insight into how he goes about things.
Funny you brought that up, Shrub, because the other day, Half was trying to write off the old blokes in Australian cricket. So
that's exactly right,
Adam. Dan, I think... finished playing, interestingly, obviously played a lot of cricket with Dan over my career, and he's played the last, up until a couple of years ago, for Victorian Shiffordshire in one-day cricket. But it's interesting to see him now play. He's got better, obviously at 2020, because that's the only form, and he's just playing that all around the world. So he's improved his game, as a 32, 33-year-old, now to be so experienced and so specific at 2020. And he's experienced all those situations, and not only in Australia, but all around the world in all sorts of conditions under all sorts of different pressure. So it holds him in very good stead for whatever situation the game throws up. And playing for the Renegades this year, we tried and got ourselves into most situations throughout the year. So we had that was one thing we were saying in the team meetings before we got to the finals. Was we basically we'd try to stuff up a few games and found ourselves in all sorts of different situations throughout the season. So we thought we had most covered.
You've played cricket for so many years. Has it sort of changed the way you see cricket? Like, have you learnt something through a 14-game season, which effectively was a 16-game season, that you didn't know about T20 cricket, or would you do things differently now than what you would have, say, 10 years ago with the way the game's played? Or is it just, it was just one of those out-of-the-box type seasons?
I think I've played nearly 250 T20, so I don't think I do too much differently the way sort of this season played out from a individual or apart from playing better, obviously, but a team point of view. I think most of the, there'll be another, someone will evolve the game in some respect, I'm no doubt, in the next few years, but it sort of seemed as though, there's tiny little things that people sort of do that maybe, players weren't a few years ago, but I don't think, much has changed in the last couple of years.
The reason I asked the question, because one thing the Renegades did better than any other team was their last six overs bowling. And Gurney was clearly one of the keys to all of that. And we talked about this half before, well and truly before the cricket season, what was going to be different, because the bowlers, I thought, had to stand up, because it was a real batting tournament last year. And this year it seemed that Gurney was the one that sort of led that, the death overs. Dan Christian, I think, bowled well in the death, surprisingly. And then even Cameron Boyce, the way he bowled. Defensively, you just seemed to have a good setup.
Yeah, well, those three guys you mentioned now are all specifically T20 bowlers, aren't they?
Right.
They don't play any other. Cameron Boyce, isn't playing for Queensland anymore either. So, maybe that's probably the, thinking about your question now, is maybe the one change, that there's just more specific T20 players around the world. So, and we just happen to have two of them, bowling towards the back end of our innings most times. So I think that definitely helps. Harry Gurney was obviously recruited to replace Shinwaria as that type of sort of back-end sort of bowler.
Did he surprise you, Harry, with how he went?
I honestly hadn't seen much of him play, but, he played a lot with Dan Christian at Notts, so Dan was raving about him, and probably Dan had a lot to do with getting him to the club. So I knew that was his sort of role, and he probably executed as good as anyone around the world in those back few overs and under pressure in the finals as well.
Well, it's a good game for the old guys, no doubt about that.
17, he's changed his tune now.
17 past 7. You weren't listening, Cameron. We'll get to a break. We'll talk more about it after that. There's still plenty of discussion points from the weekend and moving forward as well for Victorian cricket coming up this weekend at the Junction Oval. 17 past 7. Cam White in the Summer Sanctum. 21 past 7 on a Wednesday morning. Cameron White from the championship-winning Renegades in the Big Bash on Sunday in the chair this morning. Looking forward to finding out more about what might be for him and the Victorians for the remainder of the Shield season shortly as well. Just some updated Champions League news as well. We're 20 minutes into two key matches, Lyon and Barcelona. Nil all in that at this stage. And Liverpool and Bayern Munich also nil all, 21 minutes in. More on that through the morning. When you ran out the skipper, Whitey, with the drive back down straight.
When
back.
I ran him out.
Yeah, well, you ran him out. It was off you.
It's unlucky.
And it comes off Bird's foot and his middle stump and the skipper's out. What did you think? Because we saw what Aaron Finch thought when he went down the tunnel.
I'm thinking it's not our day today. I'm thinking, geez, there's 4 days for that, something like that to happen. And Finchie, he's in. I'm thinking, it's just not meant to be.
Because it wasn't an outstanding summer for Aaron, and a lot of things go wrong. And then that, to top it off, he would have been absolutely pancake flat.
Yeah, and it's a funny game, cricket. I know that everyone says that, but it seems to be the way when you get on a bit of a downward roll or an upward roll, whichever way you're sort of looking at it, things can either go really well for you, or it sort of just really keeps kicking you in the backside. So that's just a freak dismissal and not one you want in a big match like that. So at that stage, I was thinking, Jesus, not today.
Just, we want to talk about Victoria making that transition from Big Bash cricket to Shield cricket, but at the end, it's been a big talking point about how emotional you were. Was it because of the fact you've now got the Triple Crown, you've got all three? Was it the fact that you're just winning, or how much it meant to play with Dan Christian and win a title with him? What was going through your mind?
Probably a bit of a combo of a lot of things, but the obviously winning for a start, and the circumstances, the way the game sort of unfolded. And I guess I said in the coverage afterwards, like any time that you leave a club or you're playing against an old club for whatever reason, it sort of just probably means a bit more. You know, it feels like you've sort of, not that you've got one back on them, but you sort of, you know, there's a bit of extra passion there. So, yeah, that probably had a bit to do with it as well.
Will it be your last game in red?
I'm not sure. I'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. There's an embargo period. What is embargo? Is that just mean you can't talk or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I'm uncontacted for next year. So I think the list is pretty full. So it's probably looking more unlikely than likely.
And how does that make you feel? Because you've obviously been one of Victoria's best players, one of Australia's best short form players of the last 25 years, and you're in this vulnerable position because we had Brendan Goddard in here last year, and we had similar discussions with him that. It's you're in a unique position in your career, I guess.
Yeah, very. Especially, you know, probably like Brendan at that stage, I'm keen to keep playing as well. My form has been really good in Shield cricket and One Day cricket as well, has been for a few years. So didn't have the tournament I would have liked in the Big Bash this year, but I was still able to contribute in a few games, so that was good. So, and apart from, you know, this little hamstring niggle over the last, you know, couple of weeks, my body, you know, throughout my career has been really good. So, and apart from that, is at the moment as well. So, yeah, I want to keep playing. But we're just, you know, when you're in my position and you're a bit older, you've got the ball isn't really in your court. You're sort of at the mercy of if anyone wants to give you a contract. And that's my situation at the moment in Big Bash and for Victoria.
Cam, there's been a lot of talk about the length of the season this year. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the talk around our team, and I think Andrew McDonald might have summed it up as well during the maybe in the last week or so. We thought maybe the amount of games was okay, but the 14-game season. But I think we can just condense those 14 games into a shorter period of time. I don't think anyone's really complaining too much about how many games. It's just that how long the actual tournament goes for. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, situation where 7-day break, 6-day break, 7-day break.
Yeah, so I think we can still play 14 games if that's, you know, what everyone wants to do, and that's the best thing for the league and the fans and the coverage and all those sort of things, but maybe just, you know, shorten the actual period that the tournament runs over.
The good thing was about, and I think I mentioned this last week, the window that it ended up being in meant that most of the Australian players were available, which is not always what's happened in the past. So I guess it's finding that right balance with finding the right window and the right length of time.
Yeah, for sure. And not only to with the Australian players, but just if we're, you know, there's still some juggling with the international calendar and the domestic calendar as well, trying to play more domestic one-day cricket and all those sort of things. So it's definitely not an easy job for the person who's sorting out the schedule throughout the year. But, yeah, I'm sure it'll, you know, be talked about and reviewed and all that sort of thing. So I'm sure they'll come up with the best outcome.
Sherelle, what was the post-mortem from the Stars' perspective? We forgot that you were on the board of Melbourne Stars until the end break.
Did we?
We forgot that just for a little second.
Well, there hasn't been any official wash-up as yet.
No emergency crisis meeting?
Well, it was a bit late for that. It was pretty, as you can imagine, pretty grim in the rooms after the game. But, you know, I get Whitey's just alluded to, it's a funny game, cricket, and this is the nature of T20. It can turn on an over or two, and unfortunately that's what's happened. So we will review that. Well, I mean, you do anyway. We would have whether the game went the other way or not. So that's just part of the process.
Jeez, you've put Sherelle under more pressure than Cameron here. This is
it's good to see.
Board member, just power of position. You got to take the heat.
New coach next year as well, Sherelle. Is that what? Right at the start?
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I'd heard. I think Stephen Fleming's stepping down. Is that right? Or finishing up.
Well, I guess that'll be all part of what we talk about.
Is he out of contract, Stephen Fleming?
No idea.
I'm intrigued now.
That's facing it'll... Riley Merrill.
I'm trying to block, but I think, am I going as well as...
Got one of the ribs there.
Slow wicket.
Chin music.
Chin music. Now, it won't be a slow wicket at the Junction this week, will it, for the Vicks, for the Shield? Is it easy to flip modes? Because you've been in T20 mode for so long now.
No, this is the hardest way for players to go from one-day cricket or a short-form cricket back to four-day cricket. So, yeah, it's a bit of a challenge as we talked about, with the schedule. There's only sort of, what is it, 4 or 5 days before the first game. So, Saturday down at the Junction, Vicks v Queensland.
Yep.
So, and the Duke ball as well. So, from a white ball and T20, which goes, you know, generally pretty straight, to one that swings around, you know, a fair bit. So, it'll be a big challenge. Not only for the batsmen, but for the bowlers to be able to, you know, get their wrist in the right position and control the swing and the seam. So, but Love playing at the Junction in, since the new facilities, the Graff Centre's gone up, so look forward to it.
As a batsman, do you like ask for 90 minutes just in the nets and just sort of, you know, just settle things down? How do you
poor bowlers, mate, just coming at him for 90 minutes.
They can get you got six batsmen,
there's 540
minutes.
Get out of
as quick as possible.
Right. But how do you sort of, I would imagine it's more slowing your mind than actually physically to get yourself back into that zone. How do you do it?
Yeah, mindset is the most important thing. More important than batting and practice in the nets, to get yourself into the right frame of mind to be able to deal with, as a batsman, with the swing and the type of bowler that you're going to face. So combine that with a bit of specific practice. This is probably what I'll do over the next couple of days to try and, you know, cope with what I'm about to face.
So is it, because will there be situations on Saturday that you'll see the ball and it's full and you just want to hit it over cover? And then you've got
I hope not, if I'm in the right mindset. No.
Yeah, but are you actually resisting those urges to do that, or you can actually block it out pretty easily?
No, I'm hoping that I can change the mindset pretty quickly. It'll just be a focus about playing the ball as late as I can. Hitting the ball in a few different areas with the Duke. So traditionally against the Red Kookaburra, you'd look to play a lot straighter, whereas this ball swings so much, you sort of got to hit the ball later and go with the swing a bit, hit the ball a bit squarer. So that's something we'll talk about over the next couple of days with the Vicks. But yeah, it's just a change of definitely, obviously, mindset from the shorter format and a bit, you know, tactically as well.
Should the Duke stay? I mean, it was introduced to help us prepare for an Ashes series as an English ball. Should it stay, or should we stick with the Kookaburra? Peter Siddle thinks we've had enough of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to be with Peter. I think we've got a good thing about this winter. I think we've got quite a lot of our batsmen and a few of our bowlers are going to county cricket, and I think that's there's no better place to learn how to play in, you know, the Duke ball than in England versus their Duke. So, because our ball is a bit different to theirs as well. So I think we just need to make sure that every time that an Australian, you know, we come, and a visiting team comes to Australia, that we can beat them with the Kookaburra. So let's get as good as we can with the Kookaburra ball. Reverse swing is something we don't see a lot of these days, or in the last couple of years. So the Duke's ball doesn't really do reverse swing at all. So I think the way to go in Australia is stick with the Kookaburra, and let's get as good as we can against that.
Because the Duke that they use in the Shield cricket isn't the Duke.
It's the Super Swing.
Yeah, that England uses in England.
Why not?
Sorry, what?
I believe that the Duke they use in the Sheffield Shield is the Duke ball that they use in the West Indies and not the ball that England uses in England.
Why?
It's the question of the morning.
Yeah.
Why?
But this is I think this is true. And so if they're not using the same ball that they would use in the Ashes, why would they be using it at all?
It's a great question.
Plus, the wickets are different, obviously, here in Australia. There's so many different factors. So, like I said, I think if the best thing we can do is get as many players playing county cricket as we can in the lead-up to Ashes, and if it's a year before or 2 years before or in the few months prior to the Ashes, that's the best way to learn how to play and get used to the English conditions.
They may as well just use an incredible...
Oh, weren't they
tape
good?
Tape tenor.
Oh, yeah. Weren't they good? Chuck their lacquer bands under the tape tennis ball too. Just a bit of seam. They were good business. Whitey, we were discussing this morning the new one-day kit for next summer's series against New Zealand. I'm going to show you the 8 selection items that Cricket Australia are going to put out to the fans today to wear, because this year's shirt that the Australians wore was a raging success, and I still think should go another year, just by the way. I love that top. Which one would you choose out of the selected items that Cricket Australia are putting up for the fans today?
Well, listening in the car on the way in, I definitely don't know them as well as Adam White, that's
no,
for sure.
With I
the,
know,
he even got down to the green pockets of one of the yellow pant.
He was picking shirts that don't even exist on that shirt.
What did you go with? Was it 1992 you went with?
I like the 94-95, but it's not on there. So
oh, right. What does that look like?
Don't worry, don't ask him that.
Michael Slater at his prime. I went with the baseball one, where they first had the names on the back, so the white stripe with the Australia sort of on the diagonal in cursive writing.
Fair enough. I don't mind the 1992 World Cup shirt, or if I have second preference, 99 with the stars and the sort of stripes.
Yep, the famous one, the Headingley...
Yeah, Damien Fleming, Yorker to Klusener. Yep. Alan Donald ran or didn't...
Alan Donald,
yeah,
did Mark he run
backhand
or not?
Underarm flick. Alan Donald ran. Klusener didn't. There was two balls left, I reckon.
I remember jumping up and down on my couch at 2 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was, because of Tom Cruise, Oprah Winfrey style it was. jumping up and down the couch. But I do remember the moment. And so that's the one you go for, 92 before 99.
Maybe. How many different ones did you wear?
Only a couple, not many.
They wouldn't say they're not vintage enough for him.
No, that's true.
Mm. He's not old enough. He's still in his prime.
It struck a nerve, that comment, didn't it? Well,
clearly did with you. We've got to get moving, but always nice to chat to you, Kevin. Congratulations on the win on the weekend. Great to see the Renegades finally get their first big bash against the Scum of the Stars. Sorry, Sherelle, but I break for the Renegades. And look forward to seeing the Vicks in action this weekend at the Junction Oval. Good luck.
Thanks, Whitey.
Cameron Huff. White.
Thanks, Rob.
Part of the Renegades winning team on the weekend, getting ready for some action this weekend in the Shield at the Junction Oval. Get down to support Whitey as he calls the game too. Check out call on cricket.com.au. Back with Beck Goddard after this. Stick around on The Breakfast Club.